I invite you to join me in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life-giving love and love-giving life, Spirit called by many names from many people, Spirit who has no need of names at all, we gather together in our community on this beautiful morning, our community where we can bring our misgivings and our shortcomings, a community where we can bring our joys, a community where we can bring those things that challenge us, where we can be together with one another as human beings, where a certain kind of spirit is generated simply from the witness that we share, simply from the compassion that we hold for one another, and in holding it for one another that we learn to keep for ourselves as well. We are here because this is where we have chosen to be, so that when we take the next step, we might be intentional in that and every following decision and choice that we make, having been lifted up and held in this spirit. Let us hold this moment together in quiet. Amen.
Our ancient reading is from the Hebrew Scriptures, the book of Job. In the narrative, after Job has been stripped of his wife, his children, his livestock, his health, and all his riches, he laments, "Why did you bring me out from the womb? Would that I had died before any eye had seen me, and were as though I had not been, carried from the womb to the grave. Are not my days few? Then cease and leave me alone, that I may find a little cheer before I go. And I shall not return to the land of darkness and deep shadow, the land of gloom like thick darkness, like deep shadow without any order, where light is as thick darkness." Our modern reading is a slightly adapted piece from the book The Silence of God by James P. Carse. The meaning of the verb to pray is to ask or even to beg. The heart is a beggar. Petition and supplication are its natural modes. We live by asking. We have nothing we do not ask for. What is more, there is a kind of wisdom in begging. We know that we cannot beg pennies of the penniless, and we do not ask fools for guidance. But then neither do we ask of the rich or wise if we believe ourselves sufficient in wealth or understanding. Begging comes from need. Only the poor can be beggars, whether their poverty be in goods or spirit. If you know your need, if you do not shut your eyes to the truest longing of your heart, you will know where to take your petitions. It is not theology or philosophy, but only your heart that will lead you.
And so the theme that many of our covenant groups is looking at this month is the theme of prayer. And I actually spend considerable time contemplating the idea of prayer and sometimes as well engaging in its practice. Not necessarily in any traditional sense, but not devoid of it either. What is prayer? Why is prayer? What is it good for? What is it not good for? How might it be directed? How does prayer work? When is it authentic? And when is it not so authentic? I've addressed the topic of prayer a number of times over the years from this pulpit, and I've looked over some of those texts in preparation for this morning, and I was drawn to one particular one from a sermon that was delivered in the year 2000, 14 years ago. And I find that I still subscribe to many of the things that were in that sermon, so many of my thoughts this morning are drawn from it, though somewhat more refined, and they'll be represented here. I spoke of having in that sermon recently been up to Boston for a family wedding. And the day after the wedding, I found myself hiking along the Boston waterfront with several family members on our way to Quincy Market, which is one of my favorite stop-offs in Boston. Any of you Quincy Market fans? So it was nice to be back in Boston. As we walked along, we came upon a then recent addition to the city that I had not come across prior to that. And we stopped to give witness, really, at the new Holocaust Memorial. And by the way, for those of you who are Unitarian Universalist Association aficionados, the memorial is actually very near to where our new UUA headquarters are being created and that we'll move into by the end of this year. But back then, as we walked along, we were all immediately transported to yet a different point in time and transformed into a very different reality. This Holocaust memorial is very simple and yet astonishingly moving. It invites the visitor to both acknowledge and to try to reconcile the very highest and the absolute lowest of human capacities. It's made up of a half a dozen arch... Has anybody been there to the Holocaust Museum in Boston? It's made up of a half a dozen archways, each of which has a grated floor that gives opening to a gentle spray of steam that comes up from the underground of Boston. And each of the archways holds on its walls etched glass that bear testimonials, some very powerful testimonials from Holocaust survivors. And I encountered prayer on that joy-filled, beautiful summer day when I came across a quote etched in the glass of one of the archways there, and it contains some very powerful, some very prayerful words. Even as the mist coming up through the grating engulfing my shoes and ankles created a sensation of walking in clouds, the words engraved on the thick, transparent glass also seemed to almost float on a breeze of that Boston afternoon. And what occurred to me as I read the words there was that prayer, any prayer offered in earnest, is always absolutely real and authentic and essential. What occurred to me was that prayer holds in it a precarious and a precious entree into the possibilities of both redemption and transformation. The words on the particular glass archway had originally been scrawled in a journal by a Holocaust survivor named Amy Boniface. She'd been a member of the French Resistance, and her words helped me to understand the significance of prayer. Perhaps they will for you as well. She simply wrote this small piece. She reported, "Some Catholics invited me to join them in prayer, 7 or 8 of us gathered in the shed used as a laboratory. In prayer, we laid before God our suffering, our rags, our filth, our fatigue, our exposure, our hunger, and our misery." What is prayer? What is it good for? How might it be directed? How does it work? When is it authentic? I don't know how or why Amy Boniface survived the ordeal of the Nazi concentration camp so that she would be able to ever make such a report, but from her brief words, I knew that somehow she had been better able to endure her terror-filled experience of it because she was able to open her heart and give voice to her struggle through prayer. She communicated the wretchedness of her existence, and in doing so, she somehow transcended the weight of her load. Didn't go away, but she was able to move through it. Very often when new folks walk through our doors of a Unitarian Universalist congregation, one of the first questions they asked, perhaps it was the first question some of you asked, was, "Well, do Unitarian Universalists pray? And if you do pray, who do you pray to?" To be sure, our stock answer is that Can you say it with me? Some of us do, and some of us don't. One form of prayer is confession, and I'll make a confession here. I alluded to it in the children's story. While this stock answer may keep us from controversy, I'd be willing to bet more than a nickel that all of us here do indeed pray, if not in our own time and in our own way. We may not recognize our prayer as such, but that does not keep us from engaging in it. Another confession that I'll make is that while I'm getting better at it, I'm not all that great of a prayer myself. Meditation sometimes maybe, but prayer and meditation really are different. Meditation is about opening ourselves up to things coming in, and prayer is much more about expressing things outward. I take hope from the 20th century French author Georges Bernanos, who said that even the wish to pray is a prayer itself. And I find so much truth in the sentiments of the 13th century German mystic Meister Eckhart, who said, "If the only prayer you ever said was thank you, that would be enough." So that you know, my hope this morning is that we might explore together this idea of prayer in a way that could allow us to recognize its potential and its value in our lives, so that we might even consider becoming more intentional in the practice of prayer, and then perhaps even more accustomed to its benefits. The greatest impediment to a Unitarian Universalist approach to prayer is our common understanding, or more, our common misunderstanding, that prayer is a communication with God. Not all UUs find the concept of God to be a useful one. We know that communication requires at least two parties, a speaker and a listener. So how can we agree on the efficacy of communicating with a partner that we can't even agree exists? Maybe we need an understanding of prayer that better relates to our Unitarian Universalist sensitivities. We are the ones who get to name our own experience. So let's talk about theology for a moment. Theology is an area of thought in which we define our larger and smaller understandings of things. Through our theologies, we attempt to make sense of our lives, of our beliefs about the universe, about birth and death, about the passage of time. Our theologies are our intellectual attempts to make sense out of the cause of being. And while the concept of God may or may not be useful to us in addressing these issues, something that Unitarian Universalists all do agree on is that we are a part of something much larger than ourselves, and that our very being rests within that larger being, whether we appreciate that larger realm as society or nature or some larger universal sphere, we tend to recognize and agree that we are a smaller part of something that's larger than ourselves. And more, because the smaller exists within the larger, we are dependent for our being and for our well-being upon connections, both seen and unseen, within that larger sphere. Our interdependent web of existence can and does take on all kinds of different meanings. We've all encountered gods in our lifetimes that have not been very useful or helpful. We've all come up against some pretty nasty gods that have provoked far too narrow-minded bigotry, and we don't need those stinking gods. If you tell me you don't believe in God, I have to imagine that whatever God you don't believe in, I most likely don't believe in that God either. I would be pretty hard-pressed, though, to understand what you might be saying if you were to say that you don't believe that you're a part of something larger than yourself. As we continue, I'd like to offer an assumption and a clarification at this point. The assumption is that regardless of our position on the concept of God, if prayer is a communication between two parties, however we define or name that which is larger than ourselves, we do indeed have somewhere some larger realm into which we can direct our concerns. The point is not that there is a God, or that God or whatever is going to be personally responsive to our pleas. The point is that there is other, there is both I and thou, there is the larger sphere of which we are a part and into which we can direct our appeals. The point of clarification is that much of what I've just said has been theological in character. The intellectual process of defining our largest understandings of things is a very different process than the process of prayer. Theology is talking about, and we all know that Unitarian Universalists are world champions in talking about. anything. Prayer, though, is more about talking to, or perhaps more accurately, it's more about talking from our experience, from our hearts, from our gratitude, from our longing. You may not feel compelled towards ending each day by saying, "Now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep." But I know as a child, those words gave me comfort at what was for me a very scary time of the day. And I wonder, what are the words and the practices that you use now to calm your misgivings, to soothe your woes, even to express your joys when they rise up before you in the middle of the night or at any other time during the day? In his book, The Silence of God, Meditations on Prayer, 20th century American theologian James Carse talks about the futility of defining any God in order to provide ourselves an object for our prayer. He says, "To use theology to make prayer possible is getting it backwards. Prayer, which depends on theology to define its proper addressee, is bound to be discourse about something and not to someone. To be engaged in genuine prayer," Carse suggests, "depends on its origin and not on its object or its content. What is truly spoken from the heart is prayer," he concludes. We laid before God our suffering, our rags, our filth, our fatigue, our exposure, our hunger, and our misery. The profound and heartfelt words on the Holocaust memorial confessed, "Honest prayers come from the heart. We don't have to know all the answers. We don't have to have the best theology. We need only be honest and open as we speak from our hearts in our attempt to be held, with all of our misgivings and shortcomings, held in that something which we recognize as being larger than ourselves." Why, we might ask, would we even want to open our hearts and acknowledge the depth of pain and suffering in our lives? For the most part, Unitarian Universalists are really pretty well off, aren't we? Why can't we just focus on the positive and then strive to live up to those expectations? I remember a sermon I gave for Rosh Hashanah one year, and I was talking about sin, and one of the members of the congregation came back and said, on the receiving line, said to me, "Well, what if I have nothing in my life that I regret?" And I said, "Maybe you want to think about it longer. I don't know." I'm sure you could add your own responses to my list, but primarily the reason we might want to pray is because to be human is to want and to be left wanting. From the moment of our birth, we become separated from all that is. We start out wanting again to be in sync and in harmony with all that is. Thank goodness we have so much to celebrate along the way, but we live to trifles, I'm afraid, when we fail to acknowledge the painful side of our human experience. And if we are able to acknowledge that more difficult side without being consumed by it, we need to do something with what we find there. And the something we might want to do is to offer it up in earnest, heartfelt, and longing prayer. Lots of people think that prayer provides the opportunity to restructure the universe in our own image. No matter how we might attempt to instruct the universe, though, through prayer or otherwise, we're not very likely to cause sunshine to occur in the midst of a raging storm, no matter how much we may want to avoid rain on our parade, whatever parade we might be celebrating. Often people turn to prayer in an attempt to alter the natural course of things in an effort to produce magical but unnatural conveniences and benefits. Danish philosopher Kierkegaard once commented that prayer does not change God, but it changes the one who prays. My late UU colleague Ranley Kaul took that a step further when he said, "Prayer doesn't change things. Prayer changes people. People change things." So another reason we might want to pray is that we might be changed through prayer, so that perhaps through us and our work, the world might itself be changed as well. Sometimes prayer can be the expression of grandiose thinking. This is a sort of egotistical, selfish prayer that might be used as a thinly veiled threat by those who are themselves easily threatened. Like a weapon in an arsenal, such a prayer can be used as a tool of competition, seeking to place the person praying in a greater favor with some imagined grantor of those magical requests. Such prayers might be heard in boardrooms or on battlefields, in locker rooms, or even in church sanctuaries. They might be prayers that ask for profits or victories, or for the validation of self-righteous meanness. And then there are the kinds of prayers that we might more want to aspire towards. Prayers of the heart that could also be heard in some of those same rooms and fields. These are prayers that aren't intended to recreate the universe in our own image or to our own liking. They are prayers that might help us, though, help us to change so that we might be better suited to the needs of the world, a world so much in need of better servants and better stewards. Whatever outcome of such prayer there might be, there's one thing of which I am fairly sure. The outcome of our prayer is not likely to be a direct response from anything out there that we might construe to be as God. If we hear a voice in direct response to our longings, I suspect strongly we are talking to ourselves. James Carse put it this way: "In all candor, I must say that I have never heard God speak. What I have experienced and experienced repeatedly is the silence of God." For years, Carse found this silence to be distressing, and he felt that his life was void of significant religious experience. And then he came to realize that silence is not the absence of experience, but that it is the very essence of religious experience. How often do we feel the need to disprove the existence of God by citing God's lack of a discernible response to our prayer? If there were a God, we might say to ourselves, he would answer our prayers and prove his existence. If there were a God, we might say, he would hardly grant someone else's prayers in competition with my own. If there were a God, praying mothers and fathers would never lose the life of a young child. If there were a God, prayers for peace and justice and equity would be answered. Our planet's health would be restored and its wealth would be shared by everyone. If there were a God, silence could never be that God's response to our heartfelt prayers. But in the end, silence is what we receive. The question is not whether or not there is a God. The question is, are we able to unburden our hearts when we are in pain? Are we able to give thanks when we are grateful? Are we able to articulate our smallness within the vastness of this magnificent universe in which we have our being? We don't need to reject our place in that something larger than ourselves just to be rid of someone else's patriarchal God of some sort, or just to be rid of a God that has any human characteristics or attributes at all. We don't need a God the Father or a God the Mother or any omnipotent being. We do need to engage in the connections that hold us in life, connections that bind us one to another and each of us to all that is. We can simply have faith that there is something larger, that we are a part of it, that it is a part of us. Silence doesn't do anything. Silence simply is. We can trust silence. In it, there are no lies. We can trust that this silence which exists in that which is larger is a safe repository for our greatest misgivings and our deepest yearnings. We can have faith in that. We can trust that silence is a reasonable and an adequate response to our longings, because within the bounds of silence, we have our being, we have our lives, and we have hope for the future. Honest prayers come from the heart. We don't have to know all the answers. We don't have to have the only or the best theology. We need only be honest and open as we speak from our hearts in an attempt to be held with all of our misgivings and shortcomings within that something larger than ourselves. We laid before God our suffering, our rags, our filth, our fatigue, our exposure, our hunger, and our misery. Prayer doesn't change things. Prayer changes people. We are the ones who change things. Another reason we might want to pray then is so that out of the silence, we might be changed. We might be healed. We might be made more whole. And so that perhaps through us and through our response, the world itself might be changed and healed and made more whole. My colleague Wayne Arneson wrote these words, "Take courage, friends. The way is often hard and the path is never clear, and the stakes are indeed very high. Take courage, for deep down there is another truth. You are not alone." And so may our prayers ever remind us of this truth as well.